Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Reed Guess. Reed and his Trailer Guess Family Barbecue were named one of the top spots in the state by Texas Monthly Magazine, and he's got big plans for continuing the barbecue tradition in Waco. But before that conversation, it's the word on the street. Chef Elizabeth Pannebecker at Barnett's Pub has created space for other culinary artists to showcase their skills in Barnett's series of specialty guest dinners. Nate Gay, the executive chef of the Hilton Hotel, is featured tonight.
Pretty impressed that Barnett's has opened their place to have the local chefs in there and focus on local businesses and all working together to help each other out with exposure and working together and just having some fun.
Nate grew up in Waco and bumped around Central Texas before coming back to town 2 years ago. That travel imbued him with a rich history and knowledge of Texas culinary traditions that he feels called to share.
I have some childhood memories here and want to bring back some of to Waco all of my experiences across Texas, all the different regions of Texas cuisine, if you will. But I want to focus on Hill Country and a little bit more of my roots and introduce that here at the Hilton.
The hotel recently renovated its kitchen and dining areas and is soon to expand its mobile catering and bar services. The restaurant at the Hilton, which is open to the public, offers a small house menu with signature dishes as well as weekly special features.
I've built a reputation on custom menus, so if someone has a family recipe that they want to have at their wedding, or it's a family reunion, they want something specific, or one of their family members worked in a packaging plant and had a very specific item that they were involved in, anything custom we'll make happen.
For tonight, he's prepared four courses for the specialty dinner. Heart of romaine tossed in honey apple relish, smoked gouda grits and sautéed shrimp, beef hanger medallion, and drunken cheesecake mousse to finish it off. The dinner starts at 7 p.m. and reservations are required. Meredith Wagner is an upcoming Baylor senior. She has been kind enough to start doing a little bit of reporting for Waco Business News. And one of the first stories that we decided she should talk about is young people deciding to stay in Waco. It's been a relatively new trend. Meredith, what have been your findings so far?
Yeah, I've talked to a few people in Waco this week, and we've come to similar conclusions with every conversation I've had about Waco just growing exponentially in a bunch of different ways. But one of those ways is attracting people from outside the city. And additionally, recent graduates are being retained. They're staying in Waco after they graduate. And that wasn't really a prospect 5 years ago. But now it's kind of like a trend that the cool thing to do is to stay in Waco.
So who have you talked to about this? And what kind of perspectives are you getting?
Yeah, absolutely. So I talked to Keith Maynard. He is a tax manager with JRBT, but he also works for Waco Young Professionals. So Waco Young Professionals is a networking organization that basically gives young professionals in Waco the resources they need to be successful and to connect with each other. And he said he's really passionate about this because he sees this energy in Waco that is growing, and it's really exciting for a lot of people, and he wants people to feel like they can start their careers here. So there's people here working in Waco specifically for young people trying to stay and get their feet on the ground and maybe plant their feet here.
And Keith is an older guy who had been in Waco and left, moved to California.
Right.
And for some reason, the lure of Central Texas brought him back.
Brought
him back from California. And yeah, what Keith does with Waco YP is coordinate a lot of the events.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is his job to let young professionals know, hey, like, you are not the only one who's here. We have fun ways that you can get engaged. And if you are a young professional working in Waco, I would encourage you to check out YP. If you are hoping to become a young professional in Waco, there are resources to help you get that job.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting for a lot of different types of people, too. It's not just these young people who have these opportunities, but I think people who have been living in Waco for a really long time now have new resources to get good jobs that maybe they couldn't have gotten 5 years ago.
And one of those resources is an initiative of Prosper Waco. I spoke with Dr. Matthew Polk last week, and we talked about the education and the financial security and the health of Wacoans. Part of that financial security is raising that median income.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan Hebert with Campus Town and part of Prosper Waco is helping start that.
Right, absolutely. I talked to him too this week, and he's also very passionate about the city and about keeping young people in the city and working for the local economy. And actually, Evan's sole job is to meet one-on-one with people and connect them with potential employers. So it's really exciting for him to watch this happen time and again. And that's his full-time position, is to keep people here.
And has Evan given you any indication in your conversations about the types of job that people are getting?
He said it can be anything. And he said that's the cool thing about his position, is not only does he... His target market is young professionals and recent graduates, but he's also working with people who maybe want a career change when they're 60, and he can get them anywhere that they want to be.
Oh, wow. And his services are not exclusive for Baylor students.
Correct.
TSTC, McLennan, any young person or old person who's looking for a job, you can get in touch with Evan.
Right. And that just goes to show that the city is really investing in their young people. His job is sponsored by Baylor and the city. So they're really paying for people to have a job to keep other people in. And that's not like a desperate attempt. That's more of like, we want this city to continue growing the way it's growing.
Well, that strong collaboration between the private sector and between the city of Waco and Baylor is starting to reap some fruits. We've seen the launch of Waco Work, the co-working space, which is private. Now Startup Waco will be getting its initiative at the Woolworth Suites building downtown on 6th and Austin. But we're now seeing younger people who are moving back here and starting businesses, and one of whom you spoke with, I just think is such a cool story. This guy, Eric Rent, he started Nightlight Donuts. Let me play this clip from that.
I think I've like struck gold with this donut truck, and not in a cocky way. I just feel like I've found something that people really love. I feel like I'm meeting a need for Waco, and like more than just donuts, I can create like an experience.
So what are your impressions of Eric, and why did he come back here?
Yeah, well, Eric was great. I love talking to him, and it's actually him and his twin brother, Jackson. So they moved to New York with every intention of staying there. They loved the adventure of the big city, and they found themselves working with an artisan pastry chef and just learning how to make donuts, and they intended to start this place in New York, and they were kind of talking like, this could be a really good thing for Waco. We think Waco could use this. We see a lot of potential in this city, so we want to come back. And that wasn't their initial plan, but they ended up finding their way back to Waco, and they've been extremely successful so far. So it's really great to see a real good example of that happening, of people leaving and then realizing that, oh, Waco is somewhere that I want to spend my time and be and invest in and build relationships. It's different from the big city life. It offers a different kind of opportunity.
Meredith Wagner reporting on young professionals growing and booming in Waco for Waco Business News. Check out her article on wacobusinessnews.com. Thanks so much for coming on and talking
about
it.
Thank you, Austin.
Reed Guess is the pitmaster at Guess Family Barbecue, one of the top 50 joints in the state, according to Texas Monthly's barbecue editor, Daniel Vaughn. Reed, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How'd you get to Waco?
I came here because my wife is from here. We met in Austin, and we had a couple kids and lived in Austin and loved it. And then Austin kind of just blew up around us. And while we still love visiting and love being there, it was just kind of not feeling like a family spot for us, and kind of way different from where Sarah and I grew up.
You're a West Texas guy, right?
Right. Yeah. I grew up in Jayton, Texas, which is out by Lubbock and Abilene. It's 90 miles from both of them. So, you know, it's a very small town. Sarah grew up here. So Austin was just really big and getting bigger. And Sarah's whole family is here, and we would visit for holidays. And you know, it just seemed like a really good place to put any restaurant or food trailer, and specifically barbecue. I mean, it was something that I was really into and was already doing at Lambert's and had done my whole life. And so it just kind of felt right to jump all the way back into barbecue and bring the family to Waco.
So you were working at Lambert's in Austin?
Right. I was there 7 years before leaving to come here. And then before Lambert's, I worked at Perla's, which is a sister restaurant to Lambert's. And, you know, cooked all around Austin. Before that, like 15 years, I was in Austin downtown cooking.
Would you consider Austin the barbecue capital of Texas?
Man, I think a year ago, I would have said yes.
Tides are shifting.
with that new, I think it probably still is, but I think also that Houston is really coming up, and you know, just with the amount of people on that top 50 list that came out in 2017, you know, just really kind of shifted, because it was a lot of Austin joints, and now you know there are more Houston joints on it too. So it's a lot of great things happening in Houston. It's definitely a barbecue destination.
Houston's always been a fabulous culinary scene because there's so much diversity.
Right.
But to see that the barbecue is finally catching up with what's been happening in Austin for years, you know, with Franklin's, and I love Micklethwaite. Mm-hmm. There's so many other good spots there. But yeah, Houston is caught up, and now you are sort of dragging Waco into the modern days of barbecue lore.
I hope so. I hope so. That's the goal. You know, it makes sense being kind of centrally located between all the big places. It makes sense that there should be a place to at least stop on these guys that, and gals that go on barbecue tours. You know, they leave for a day and go to four or five spots. I mean, there's a real big void here, and I think, you know, with us and Hellberg and Honky Tonk and people that are really, you know, putting a lot of care into barbecue, I think it's going to be great for Waco.
What makes Texas barbecue Texas barbecue?
Oh, that's a loaded question. But I think, you know, the easy answer is brisket. The easy answer is beef, I think. Salt and pepper definitely play a big role.
What's the hard answer?
It goes so far. You know, the offset cookers that we use here are much different than the ones, you know, out in the Carolinas, and you don't do a lot of whole hogs here, you know. So it's kind of just different meats, different rubs. We tend to just use salt and pepper here, or, you know, a dry rub, whereas like you go to another place, you might find real sticky ribs or you know, very sauced barbecue. So it's kind of more simple, more pure here, I think. And the biggest part is the beef. We highlight beef here because that's what, you know, that's where it's always been. So
have these regional trends, so beef in Texas, if you're in Carolina, maybe you're eating pork ribs, much more of like a tangy, more vinegary style. Are these based on just the natural environment? Like, okay, we live in St. Louis, we have access to this, that's why this is our barbecue? Or is there more behind the
Definitely with the meats, you know, definitely with what meat's being raised around you, that plays into it a lot. And then also it's just kind of what they settled on as being tasty and delicious, and it's been that way for so long. And barbecue is, no matter what region it is, it's been there forever. You know, it's the first way of cooking in any region. So it's, you know, there's going to be, you know, specific regional styles to it, and they're probably going to stay that way, you know, for a long time, because people, you know, barbecue is one of those things that is heavy in tradition, you know. So people love to stick to those traditions, I think, and that's why they, you know, just kind of, that's why they don't change.
Is barbecue a tradition in your family?
Yes, it is. My dad kind of taught me most of what I knew before kind of starting this venture. And we built barbecue pits, and we built when we would build them, people would ask us to use them for events, right? There wasn't a catering company in my small town, or, you know, getting someone to come from Lubbock or Abilene was very expensive. So we would end up catering just because we were the guys who could build the pits. And that just kind of turned into a passion for barbecue for me.
What makes a good pit master?
Oh, man. Time. You know, just putting in the time. You can't be a good pit master if you're not at the pit. You know, that's just not possible. So I just think more than anything, it's the same thing that makes a good chef or a good sous chef. It's just really just time, just being there. And, you know, there are a lot of guys who take tons of notes on every cook, and they're very successful. I don't, but I think it's a good thing that, you know, if somebody's starting out cooking, trying to be a good pit master, it's probably good to take notes. And there are just so many variables, and understanding those variables and how to kind of translate those into good barbecue. And when I say variables, I mean the weather, the humidity, the wood, the actual meat. Every brisket's different. Every log that I throw in the firebox is different. The wind blowing over the top of the smokestack's different every day. So interpreting the weather and the wood and the kind of the things that you have to work with to come up with this same exact perfect product every time, that's the key. You know, it's just understanding the variables.
Barbecue tradition has been passed down generation to generation, but it seems like within the last few years, maybe it's just because of the rise of the popularity of the style itself, it's gotten really academic. Texas A&M, they have a degree in meat sciences. Aaron Franklin is one of a number of pitmasters who go there and they put on courses. Do you have any sort of formal training or do you think that that's important as a pitmaster?
I think it helps a lot. I think I love what they're doing at A&M, and they have the brisket camps and the barbecue camps that people can go to and learn directly from people like Aaron and these great pitmasters in Texas that you know, you can watch Aaron Franklin trim a brisket sitting in a classroom setting. That's pretty great. There's also YouTube. There's tons of videos online of how to cook, how to, you know, pick the wood, how to pick the brisket, how to trim a brisket. There's tons of stuff available. I don't have any formal training with barbecue. I did go to culinary school, so, you know, like I was saying with the variables, it's cooking is nothing more than taking food from one temperature to another. So I guess the formal training I got in culinary school definitely helps, you know, with, I mean, cooking on a pit's no different than an oven. If it's science, you know, like I said, it's one temperature to another. It's not.
I was a little more scared about cooking until about 6 months ago when I bought my first sous vide.
Yeah.
And if you're not familiar, a sous vide is a machine that's a heating element. You'll bag up your meat or whatever you want to cook, put it in this underwater bath, and then put the sous vide inside of there. And you say, okay, set it at the temperature of 125 degrees or 134 degrees. And it gets the meat perfectly to that temperature. So when you're talking about cooking is just all about ranges, like if something is medium rare, all that means is that its internal temperature is, what, 127 to 134 degrees.
Right.
And when I realized that I can put more science in it and take out some of the guesswork, that helped me. Like, I'm much more of a baker than mm-hmm. a chef. You're much more of a chef. I like the preciseness. But you can thrive on, you know, maybe this is going to be different than it was yesterday, but I found a new way to put spin on it.
Right, right. Yeah, and there's just so many, you know, so many ways to tweak your barbecue a little bit, you know, and really dial it in and get it perfect when you get into the science of it and the airflow in the pit. I mean, all the way down to, you know, we look at how coarse the pepper is, partly because of how it feels in your mouth when you're eating it, but also we're looking at its aerodynamics on the brisket, right? So there's kind of a happy medium where, you know, people like big black pepper, but it can be too big to where it's kind of catching smoke, right? And you want the smoke to really be flowing past the briskets fast.
So the big peppercorns sort of prevent the smoke from going into the meat and flavoring.
Right, right. It's just think of any aerodynamic testing, you know, and if you have a car in one of those and you're kind of looking at how the air goes over it and then you sprinkle something on it, you know, the tinier that pebble is, then, you know, the less wind resistance, right? Mm. So yeah, when you really get into it and just really start dissecting every part of barbecue, it gets really fun and really technical, but that's the level that barbecue's kind of gotten to lately.
The stakes have been raised by
right.
everyone.
Yeah, to make that famous list, you know, you have to really, really go at it nowadays.
And the famous list you're talking about is the top 50.
The top 50, right.
Daniel Vaughn is the barbecue editor for Texas Monthly, online as BBQ Snob. When I was living in Austin, he had just come out with his book, The Prophets of Smoked Meat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some Swiss friends visiting me, and we went down to Micklethwaite's where he was doing a signing. And maybe it helped that I had already bought two $40 books. But he had an entire tray of every different cut that they had at Micklethwaite's that he wasn't going to eat. He invited my Swiss friends and me over to eat from his plate. He explained to us the nuances of this barbecue and to these Swiss kids who mm-hmm. had never had Texas barbecue before to get it from the mouth, you know, to hear from an expert was revelatory. So I think that Daniel and his work has helped really raise the estimation of barbecue in culinary circles.
For sure, for sure. I mean, before him, there was no barbecue editor. That wasn't a job, you know, it wasn't a thing. He definitely, you know, invented it for himself and beautifully. You know what I mean? What a great job. And he gets paid to eat barbecue and kind of be the guy that all of us pit masters try to impress, which is cool, I think. What a cool job.
Food culture itself has just gotten so much bigger, too.
True,
we now have the Beard Awards, which are sort of like the Oscars for food, and you start to see some barbecue folks showing up on that at Cured in San Antonio. Was it Snow's Barbecue? I think Snow's was on there.
Tootsie got nominated. I'm not sure if she actually won
Tootsie got nominated.
She was definitely nominated
for
James Beard, and then... Yeah, there's been some barbecue names showing up on the James Beard Award, which is cool. I think Aaron got the first one, of course, but they're definitely showing up, which is great. We're getting recognition as true chefs, you know, true restaurateurs, as I think we should. Sometimes barbecue gets played down a little bit because it's, you know, because of its traditional kind of poor man's food or whatever. It's not the fine dining sort of white tablecloth place that usually gets a James Beard Award or mentioned in those type of things.
And it hasn't been until now.
Right.
And then you have top-tier chefs who are deciding, hey, I could go do nouveau cuisine, but I love barbecue.
Yeah.
Great guess. You could go work at any restaurant in the country if you wanted to and take care of the meat program, and they would be very confident that we know what's going on. But you choose barbecue. What is it about barbecue that keeps you coming back?
I think it's not the hardest food to cook, but it's the hardest to manage. I think it's everything is really big and kind of messy and heavy, and it takes so long to cook. And I think, you know, just all those things just make it harder, you know. I mean, it's also the pride, you know, that you get when people come and eat your barbecue. And in Texas, barbecue is a big deal. It's a bigger deal than normal food, I think. And to cook that food every day is the greatest job. Yeah, I mean, there are tons of people who would tell you their dream is to be able to cook barbecue every day. And while it was my dream, and it's definitely turned into a whole lot more than just cooking barbecue, there was a solid year there where my first year, that's all I did was cook barbecue, to the point where I took on a partner in my business to take care of everything else. Gene has been great and has really taken our business, I mean, to a crazy level that I never saw happening, especially this fast. But, you know, I pick barbecue because it's so close to everyone's heart, I guess. It means a lot to people. It's very nostalgic for people. I think most Texans have some sort of connection with it. And if they don't, they probably will in their life as soon as they have that perfect bite that makes you close your eyes and really enjoy it. You know, that doesn't happen with all food. And I don't know, there's something romantic about barbecue and just be cooking something that long and tending to something that long. I don't know. It's just
almost as if there's a care in barbecue that's lacking in other culinary forms that aren't as time intensive.
That's right.
I mean,
you'll
spend the night with a brisket.
Oh, I do. I spend all the nights with the brisket. Yeah, it's 5 nights a week. I spend the night with brisket.
You'd mentioned your partner, Gene Vinikov, a Chicago transplant now here in Waco, and he has helped you take what's great food and sort of spread that seed a little bit. One way is through the Coco Ramen trailer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, that's kind of how we came together. I needed help with the business side of things, and he, you know, really loved food and wanted the Waco food scene. He wasn't in the business, but he wanted the food scene to be something bigger than it was. You know, he wanted to help with it maybe or do what he could with it. So he came to me and just said, man, I think I can help you with the business side of things if you could help me with a ramen trailer. And so.
And this is a trailer that's behind Dancing Bear Pub and making Japanese ramen.
Right.
And it's using Guest Family Barbecue meats for it. And ramen is a cuisine that we didn't have in Waco until a few months ago when Coco Ramen opened up. So not only are you doing revolutionary work on the brisket barbecue side, you're doing it in other cuisines, and you've built up enough of a following with the barbecue that you have plans for a storefront downtown.
That's right. Yeah, we're gonna open up November. Construction starting any second, but
that's what they always say.
I know. Yeah, we have all the permitting and everything is done, and just really, really ready to start the construction and start seeing some progress.
So what should we expect from the Guest Family Barbecue storefront? And this will be there on 6th and Columbus next to Marshall Stueman's Waco Work and Nexus Esports.
Right. So we're going to do – it's going to be the same but bigger, right? So we're gonna expand our hours. The only time we'll be closed actually is going to be Sunday evening. So we're going to do lunch and dinner.
Man, there's nothing better to get me in the mood for a Sunday nap than going and eating a bunch
right.
of brisket.
Yeah, we're going to do a really big Sunday brunch, live music and bottomless mimosas, and just do it really big on Sunday, kind of end of the week bash, and then go home and rest for the rest of the day. But, well, I guess some people will. You know, barbecue, you have to start the day before. So 6 days of barbecue means 7 days of cooking. But we're going to have – it's 7,000 square feet, so it's going to be like 300 seats. It's a really,
wow.
really big space. And we kept it big. We put the walk-in and the smoke house out back, so we're not eating up any square footage with that. And so we have a lot of room for a lot of people to come. And something else for people to do in Waco. You know, we've got a lot of tourists here, and I think there's a real need for something else for people to do. Here there is plenty to do, but there I think is always room for more, and so we want to have a place that's a little more than a restaurant, somewhere that's more of, you know, a place you can hang out for a little while and catch some live music, you know. And like I said, it's going to be really big, so it's going to be great for catering and special events and stuff. So
Reed, I'll get you out of here on this. Where would you assess the Waco restaurant scene currently? And where do you see yourself fitting into it?
Currently, I see it just ripe, man. It's so perfect for people to open up right now. Milo just opened and is doing an incredible thing for the city, providing that level of food, especially all day, something I'm not even willing to do. I'm not making breakfast. Make brunch once a week, but that's it. But, I think it's... You know, Corey's shown that it's, you know, people are here and they want to spend money on really good food. And, you know, as a restaurateur, what better thing to have? And where I see myself is just sliding right into it and hopefully, you know, helping it the most that I can. It's definitely not our only concept. Coco Ramen already has a storefront in the plan. So, you know, I just see myself just sliding right in and hopefully promoting the whole city as a place to come and eat.
You're definitely raising the bar for all the culinary scene in Waco. So as someone who continues to eat your food proudly and really enjoyed the lamb roast that you did last weekend as well, I'm grateful that you're here in Waco and that you can be setting the example for all the other chefs to keep on pushing forward.
Well,
so
thanks.
Reed Guess, pitmaster from Guest Family Barbecue, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Reed Guess, Nate Gay, and Eric Wren of Nightlight Donuts, and be sure to check out reporter Meredith Wagner's new piece on the city's rising workforce, available right now on wacobusinessnews.com. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.